Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 51 of Slamfire Radio for April 6th, I believe. Is it April? No. Is it April 6th or April? I don't even know what day it is today. April 4th. April 4th. Yeah.
Are you sure?
That's a really, Matt, that's a really bad April Fool's joke.
It really is. It's only one month away from Star Wars Day, though.
Here I have Thursday, April 3rd on my screen. So.
Well, you see, we release the show on Fridays, so I always make it the next day. So,
gotcha. Yeah.
That's okay, though. Thanks for cutting in, though, Chris, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. It's good to be back. As you can tell, that I'm very, very rusty.
It's Christopher Anderson, folks. He's he last appeared on the show this third episode or fourth episode of Slamfire Radio, I think. And
it
he
was one of the famous...
Yes.
Dr. Pepper and Scotch episode.
Yes, mm-hmm. And he is Chris Anderson Presents fame, of course, and also he was one of the original hosts of Canadian Reload Radio. So, welcome back to the podcasting world, as it were.
Yeah, and I'm here by accident, too.
You kind of are. He kind of just called
you to
me
ask
up.
You something, and I get roped into the podcast. So.
That's right. Well, basically,
Let's start off like the way we started off the Dr. Pepper and Scotch episode. So.
Oh, are you gonna break all the rules?
No, actually, well, yeah, I don't know. I think I'll break one rule. Maybe 10X will be mad at me. I'm not sure, but what I do? Can you guys see the bottle here on the screen?
If I hold it's a little bit low. Those of you who are listening on the regular show, you missed out. We actually recorded this live, and this is actually on YouTube on youtube.com/MMATT as a live broadcast. But you can go check that out if you're just listening. But those of you who are live here now, you can see this live. So what is it you're doing there, Chris?
All right, well, let's see. We'll do what we did last time. Let's see if you can identify what this is by the sound of the cork pull.
So. Sure.
There we go.
Oh, there it is. That's clearly Dr. Pepper. That's probably a 100-year vintage of Dr. Pepper. I believe these peppers were raised in the highlands of the Isle of Skye. That's all I got.
All right. What do you think, Owen? What do you think I got here?
I wouldn't have a foggy.
Oh, come on. That's kind of Scotch. So.
Oh, what would you have?
What general category of beverage is it?
Well, it's definitely
it's
Scotch.
You got it. It's liquor. It's liquor. What kind of liquor is it?
I don't know. I can't see it.
Come on. You're not even going to play my game.
It's Scotch, Chris. It's Scotch.
It is not Scotch.
Oh, wow. Burgundy, then. Wait, that's a wine.
Now it's
and a color.
What color is it? It's the same color as Scotch.
Oh, well, in that case, it's whiskey.
You are correct, sir. It is whiskey. But it is not Scottish whiskey. I'm actually drinking Irish whiskey tonight.
Ah, in honor of St. Patrick's Day that went by a long time ago.
Actually, in honor of it, I hadn't opened it and it'd been sitting for a while, but it's a 10-year-old single malt Irish whiskey. As opposed to your single malt Scottish whiskey.
Right. So, do you know what the difference between Irish whiskey and Scottish whiskey is?
Yes, it is.
One's Irish and one's Scottish.
Well, actually, to be quite honest, there is a difference. Irish whiskey is filtered one more time than Scottish.
Oh, interesting.
And that's why it tastes different. It goes through more filtration processes than Scottish whiskey.
Well, that's because the Scottish are so cheap.
That's right. We got to haul back on some of those. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we start off the show regularly, properly here, as we're 5 minutes into it and have talked nothing about guns yet.
What is this, a gunabout show?
What is this, a gunabout show? Yes, this is. This is a gunabout show.
Like, I need to lay off the Irish whiskey.
Cool. Well, Owen, I think you're really the only one that kind of did anything of note this week with guns. As the listeners have figured out by now, Trevor's not here. Trevor had a bit of a, a mishap.
Trevor picks his nose, and you know what they always, and they told him as a kid, you know, if you pick your nose enough, eventually your brains are going to leak out.
And they did. They leaked out all over the floor.
Yep, and his shirt.
Yeah, and his shirt. Yeah, it's on Facebook, so I don't really have too much of a problem telling you all the graphic details. So let's start from the beginning, shall we? just kidding. But anyway, yes, Owen, go ahead and what did you do this week with guns?
All right. Well, I couldn't remember if I talked about this or not last time, but I installed the scope base for that Rascal Savage, Rascal.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's. So I put that on and stuck a red dot on it for now, just to see kind of what it would be like. And she got to hold it, and of course the red dot sticks up so high that she can't even get her face anywhere near the stock.
So it's more like a chin weld than a cheek weld.
Yeah, not even that for her. But it'll be fine. She just shoots from a bench anyway, so it's not a big deal. It gets her pulling the trigger and actually being able to get close to hitting something. So
right,
it'll be fine. Now I do have sort of in that vein. I did buy a couple of used red dots from a listener to the show, and so those are on their way. So I'm hoping one of them may be a little more low profile, and I'll put that on and maybe get it down a little closer to the gun for her.
That'll help, yeah. So, I mean, the closer you can get her cheek on the stock and being able to see through the sights, still, I mean, obviously the better she's going to shoot. And you want her to learn these things new, right? Yep. Like from the beginning.
Yes, that's right. Yep. But I mean, she is 5. The gun, you just fits her. I mean, it's her arm is quite fully extended. Of course, the phone rings. Is quite fully extended when she has it positioned on her shoulder.
Right. So this is definitely something she's going to be growing into then.
Yeah, she's definitely going to be growing into it. I'm kind of looking forward to these red dots I bought. I got a Bushnell trophy, an older one. And I think I mentioned that in the show. I think we talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yeah, I think you mentioned that you did buy some red dots.
Yeah, and one of them's like an aim point knockoff or something like that. So, I figure the knockoff will work for a 22 or something, but wouldn't want to use it on a serious firearm. But the Bushnell Trophy, I've heard some decent things about those, so I might put that on my 7.5-inch barreled AR.
Oh, that'll be cool.
So I might stick it on that. Yeah, I don't have anything on it right now other than irons, so
right,
might work on that. And what else did I do? Saturday, after we recorded the show, last week, I went crow hunting. I think I mentioned I was going to go do that.
You did? And how did you make out? You haven't even told me yet how you made out.
No. It was a pretty good time. We saw a lot of crows. They're out in force this spring. And we got a chance to shoot at a few, and we got one.
Well, that's good.
It's good. It's better than a Matt walk in the woods and scare all the animals away hunting expedition.
Yeah, one of them I was really disappointed because we drove by this farm and there were crows everywhere. I mean, there must have been 100 to 150 crows in the trees. I mean, they were just everywhere. And so we took a turn, drove up the road, passed away from the houses. We could still hear the crows. Jump out of the truck and run back and get in the bushes in the side, and we're hunting with shotguns, right? The way you're supposed to do it. And so I get on the crow call, and I mean, I just like I call like 3-4 times, and they just started coming.
Oh, nice!
But they usually what crows do is they send scouts.
Uh huh.
And in my experience, you either let the scouts go or you kill them. If you shoot at them and miss...
Well, those are your two options. You're right. You can either let them go or you can kill them. Or you could just shoot at them and miss, I suppose. That's always an option.
And that's not the right option.
I got a question about these Crow Scouts. So, I don't know. Normally, if you had someone sending out a scout, then the scout would return and then the whole group would move. So, if you don't shoot at them, does then the whole group come in, or what happens?
Well, at the very least, you may be able to call them back.
Okay.
Okay. They may come and they circle around. They don't see anything. They go back. And then you call again and maybe they'll come again or other ones will come. But they came and we shot and missed and they went back and we called for probably 15 minutes, 20 minutes and couldn't get a single thing to come anywhere near us.
Oh, they're smart.
They are incredibly smart. They are the most frustrating thing to hunt when it's not working and the most rewarding thing when it is working. Yeah, we missed a number of shots that day. But anyway, oh well, sometimes you get some, sometimes you don't. So,
well, that's good. I mean, you got out there and you is that like your first dedicated crow hunt that you've ever gone on?
No, I've gone in years past. I haven't done it for a couple of years, but a few years ago, that was all I did. I mean, I had just got into the goose hunting in the fall and just at the tail end of it, so I didn't have a lot of hunting in and that fall, and so I was real keen to get out and do stuff. And so that winter, I was like every weekend I was out driving around, trying to find spots, you know, see a crow, drive down the road, jump in the bushes, try to call it in. But this is the first time I've probably gone in 2 years, maybe.
Hmm.
So other than the time, I guess you and me and Trevor and Curtis went.
Right.
That was probably the last time I'd been crow hunting.
Yeah, that wasn't really much of crow hunting so much as it was driving around the county.
Yeah.
Stopping every now and then and taking pot shots and generally missing. So. But it was a good time driving around. What's that?
No, that's pretty much what crow hunting is.
Yeah.
If you don't have a good spot. But anyway, I had a buddy with me, so we gabbed about this and that. We had a good time. And discovered in that driving around that the road that I was going to set a bear bait up on, not on the road, but the road that goes to the spot I was going to set it up on, isn't plowed out this winter, and there's no way for me to get to that spot this spring. It was completely, full of like 5 feet of snow. So there's no way I'm going to get to that spot this spring.
Oh, well.
I think by the time the snow melts off that road and it's passable, it'll be so late in, into the bear season that with no established bait down there, it'll be really hard to start partway through the season and
get anything. You don't have a bear call you could use?
Here, titty, 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 titty.
Yeah, no. It's a good spot, too. It's too bad. That's probably why it is a good spot, because nobody can hunt back there, because it's all filled up with snow in the spring.
Yeah. Well, maybe if the four-wheel drive worked in your truck, you could get out there.
Not in the snow. I mean, it's...
How about you get those tracks that you can get on those trucks now? Have you seen those?
Oh, like the tank tracks. Yeah, yeah. Those are very cool.
Yeah. If you had something like that on a four-wheeler, you could get back there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway.
Oh, well.
And then the only other thing, I guess, which is sort of gun-related, but I'm not doing it, but tomorrow my wife is starting her restricted firearms course.
Nice.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah, so she'll be doing that tomorrow and Saturday.
Now, is she challenging the course, or is she taking the class then challenging the test?
Yes. Yes, she's actually taking the class.
Oh, okay, so. Very good. I find that works well.
Yeah, I think she could challenge it and pass because she's been to the range with me and shot a couple times, and she's taken the non-restricted, so she understands gun safety, and that's all the same no matter what you have for a firearm.
What I'm interested in is hearing what the difference in the classes are between the non-restricted and the restricted. When I took my firearms safety course, it was back in 96 or something like that. It was back when they taught both at the same time.
I did the same thing.
I don't remember much of the differentiation between the they just included what the rules are for the restricted as well, and it was just included on the test. So I'm wondering I'm wondering what extra information they're giving them in the restricted course that's, able to justify a complete second course. Whereas, for us, it was just like an extra hour of, for restricted, to make sure it's also in a safe or, whatever.
Yeah. So. I think generally you're going to see things like, obviously the storage differences and transportation differences, but I think you're going to see more how the individual firearms work.
Single action,
double action, that sort of thing. And I suspect they may even, and I'll be interested to hear tomorrow night when she gets home, if they're going to deal with not so much shooting technique, but how to hold the firearms properly when you shoot.
That'll be interesting to hear. Because they talk about that.
If you read the book, they do talk about that in the book. So they may actually include more of that in the course and get everyone handling them.
Right, because I do remember they did not talk about that when I took the course. They talked about, you know, we handled the firearms, but they didn't teach us anything about stance for handgun shooting or anything like that. They showed us the stances for a rifle, but, it was mostly just looking at the picture in the book, which, that doesn't really teach you anything. It's looking at pictures. So, because if it's just talking about the differences between storage and transportation, I mean, you can cover that in about 6 minutes, maybe seven if you talk slow.
Yeah, but there's 26 people in this class.
Oh, wow. Good size.
That's
class.
A lot of. Yeah. So, where is this class taking place?
It's in Benton. It's down south of Woodstock.
Okay. Because Matt and Dan, those are the two guys that just challenged their non-restricted courses. They both want their restricted licenses as well. And they weren't sure where they would have to go, because when they called up to find out where they could go for their non-restricted, they had to call the place right here in Edmundston who administered the test and helped them with the paperwork and whatnot. But then the lady on the phone said, for non-restricted, you have to call Moncton or Dieppe or something, Riverview or something like that down Moncton way, which is...
You mean restricted?
For those of you, for restricted, yes, for restricted, which is like 4 hours away for us, 5 hours away. So they were all concerned that they were going to have to travel quite a distance just to take this restricted test. But I guess that's not the case. That's just where they organize all of the different classes, maybe.
Yes, yeah. There's three instructors, and I think there's one from Fredericton, one from Moncton, and I'm not sure where the third one is from. But there was enough people in this area that they're coming to this area as opposed to all those people going to Fredericton or Moncton.
So where the idea. Where it's potentially just Matt and Dan, they may have to actually travel.
That's right.
To go see. Now, they're not going to take the course. They're going to just challenge a test again, because I'll just go over and show them what they need to know. But hopefully I know what they need to know. So I'm going to be quizzing Amy, I think, on what sort of stuff they cover to make sure that I give them the right information before they go down.
Yeah, well, see, I challenged the restricted. I didn't.
Okay,
I never
so took you took this after they split it up?
Yes. Yeah.
And what was the? Yeah, what was it like?
They basically told us we will not help you if you were taking the course that we would you get cut a lot more slack as far as what you know and during the test portion, the practical part of it. They'll cut you a lot more slack because they assume if you're taking the course, you are very new to firearms or new to handguns.
Right. And if you're challenging it, they're going to assume that you are you're expert level, if you will.
Right.
And so they don't want to help.
It. Yeah. You're challenging it because, you're already familiar with it. You don't want to take the course because it'd be just redundant.
Right. So what they want to do basically is they're not going to help you so that you fail, so that you have to take the course and they get more money out of you.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I'm not cynical at all.
I wasn't very familiar with them at all, and I passed. But I tell you, it was an all-day process, and probably about half of the guys there that went in before me to do the practical part failed.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of that. I've actually seen people fail the practical. Yep. So it really, what it comes down is to properly manipulating the firearms with your hands, not sweeping anyone, which is the big thing. But
that's even a lot harder to do with handguns because they're so much shorter, so much easier to point them. Yep.
Yeah. So it really, what it comes down is to getting familiar with the different types. So if you are going to challenge it, I'd say go hook up with a friend who's got a good variety, because you're going to want to do a revolver. You're going to want to do a revolver where the cylinder drops out, but you're also going to want to do one where you use the rod to push out the cartridges. Mm-hmm. You're also going to want to use, do your semi-auto, whether it's single action, also double action. You're going to want something like an AR-15. And the controls are all in different places on things. On an AR, your lockback for your bolt is in a funky location. You have to know how to drop the mags. You have to know how to be able to check the chamber on all the different guns. And so if you can get a variety and sort of figure out, and of course a different variety of ammunition too, you want to handle a rim fire, you want to handle the center fire, and different calibers so that you can tell the difference between, because they'll usually have a big mix of snap cap type cartridges.
and say, okay, load the 10 millimeter. You got to identify 10 mil and then put it in the mag and then load the firearm. So, you know, you've got to be able to spot the different cartridges and spot the different type of guns and basically know how everything works. But the people I've seen fail deserve to fail, and I'm glad they failed.
Right. They just didn't know anything. They were
always just – it really, really – yeah, in some cases, just really pathetic. And, you know, it's nice to see people sort of weeded out who shouldn't be given a pass on something like that. So
right, yeah, if you don't know, I mean, if you are unsafe, you definitely should be taking the course so that you learn the proper way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And and you see a lot of I guess bruised male egos and stuff like that as a result. But
yeah, you know, I would imagine, I mean, if somebody goes in who has been shooting their whole life and they fail the course, they'll be like, what do you mean I failed? I know I've been shooting guns my whole life, you know, why did you fail me? Well, you pointed the gun at your face.
Well, it wasn't loaded. Dummy ammunition.
Yeah. I mean, you also will occasionally come across those people who have been shooting their whole life, but only with one gun. And it's just the one gun that's been in the household. And so they think that they should be able to get licensed because they know how to shoot that particular gun. But when you put five of them out on the table, and one's a semi shotgun and one's a pump, and they're not familiar with how any of them work, then, you know, sort of the confusion sets in. But you do have to be able to be confident with whatever's put in front of you, because you may end up with other guns. So, you know,
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I did it, the restricted, they had a semi-automatic and a double action revolver and a single action revolver. And I'd never handled a single action revolver at all. So that was quite, I mean, that was completely new. I didn't have a clue, really, how they worked. And that's what messed me up. That was about the only sort of big mistake I made during the practical, and it wasn't enough to fail me. But I picked it up, and I couldn't figure out how to get the cylinder to spin. I eventually figured out the little door, you know, loading door on the side. But I couldn't figure out how to get the stupid cylinder to spin, because, like, you have to half-cock the gun.
Yeah.
Right.
But I didn't realize this. I'm like pushing and prying and all the whole time, and be very careful not to point my gun. And, you know, they had like the tape on the walls and stuff, right, to show where it was safe and where it was not.
Safe and where it wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what was downrange. And so finally the guy says, I forget what he told me. I looked at him. He wasn't helping me. He was just sitting there, you know, just watching.
Yep.
And I was like, I've got to cock this, don't I? He kind of grins. So I full cock it, and I was like, and then it wouldn't spin, of course. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna half cock this thing. I'm like, and I look at him, and I'm like, I'm gonna have to put my finger on the trigger to decock it, right?
Yep.
And mm-hmm. I said that to him, and he kind of grins and nods, and I was like, So as soon as I had to do it.
Yeah.
To prove the gun safe, but as soon as I did it, boom, two marks off right there. Yeah. Just because I put my finger on the trigger during the test. Like, you know, that was, and it was, you know, made very clear. You put your finger on the test, boom, automatic 2 points off.
Yeah.
At least it's only 2 points, and it's not an automatic fail. Like, I mean, obviously, if you point the gun outside of the safe area, that's an automatic fail.
Yeah, that is the automatic fail. Yeah.
Like, kind of the other guy that I knew there who dropped the gun, yeah, automatic fail.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Usually Trevor only does that at matches.
That was me, actually.
Oh, was it you?
Trevor broke 90. I dropped a gun.
Okay. Did you guys do that in the same match?
No, but it was at the same venue. It was a year apart. Okay. Trevor did his at Provincials. Fortunately, I just did mine at a level two, just kind of like local match kind of thing. So it wasn't really a big deal for me, but I had arrived at the match and really didn't want to shoot it because I was only driving down for the day to get something from Trevor and then go home. But while I was there, I was like, well, I might as well shoot the match. I'm right here. I'm meeting him at the match. Trevor's like, yeah, you should shoot the match, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, very first stage, put my gun down, and you're supposed to start with a gun on the table. It was unloaded, so it was completely safe. But so I reach for the gun, I fumble it, it hits the floor. I just turn around, walk away. I come back. The RO picks up my gun, gives it to me. I holster it. And I'm like, see you later, guys. I'm going home. So at least I got to go home early and not have to hang around all day. But yeah, it was still kind of irritating.
Yeah. But with the, with that test, I'd say another thing, don't be afraid to overdo it on your safety checks. One thing, like let's say you are handed a revolver. Revolvers can hold up to 8, 10, I think even 12 shots, depending if it's a rimfire. So if they're asking you to, you know, use the rod to go ahead and check each one, don't feel shy about rotating past 10. Because
just to make sure. Yeah.
Who knows how many are, how many cylinders there actually are in that gun? You've never seen it before. So, you know, multiply, you know, take 6, multiply by 2, do 12, do 13. It doesn't matter. They can't penalize you for overchecking. No, so, and if you're driving a ridiculous distance like you guys do to go and do the test, you know, you don't want to get busted on one little thing that would have taken like an extra 2 or 3 seconds. So
that's right.
Yeah. I'd say if it comes to the safety thing, overdo it, overcheck the gun, overcheck the cylinders. The other thing too is that companies like Remington, they'll make batches of guns specifically for this type of thing that are inert guns. They're actual real guns, but they don't fire. But most people don't have that. So when
they
you
just
do come
have
to challenge
these old
test,
crappy guns that people don't want, and they're like old ready. French revolvers that have a funky lever to open them. And,
yeah. So what you're going to get, you're going to be confronted with a real mixed bag of oddball Bubba guns, guns in terrible shape, guns that are inoperable, guns that have a really low sort of sale value. So you might have old welded up prohibs, milsurp stuff. So be prepared for like a Tokarev pistol as your semi-auto or a Lee Enfield as your bolt action. Be ready for, you know, break action 22 or old single action 22 caliber revolver and that kind of stuff. It's not going to be, you know, if your friends have Glocks and M&Ps and all that kind of stuff, you're not probably not going to see that at the course.
Not.
So be ready for weird stuff. And if you know someone who's got sort of like older, more oddball guns, like don't be afraid to go through their safe and say, hey, look, take everything out. I want to check out everything, see how it works. Because you're going to come across stuff you don't know.
Yeah, and the other thing is don't be shy to press levers and press buttons. And like, if you haven't seen the gun before, you're going to have to play with it. You're going to have to press stuff. You're going to have to, as long as your finger stays off the trigger and it's pointed downrange, you know, press whatever you need to press to get the action open or to lock the slide back or to do whatever it is you need to do. You know, like Chris said, don't be shy.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, going back to the overdoing the safety, Dan was telling me when he was doing his non-restricted last or 2 weeks ago, he every time he had to do anything, the instructor would hand him the gun, axe improve. He did it right away, first thing, perfect. Go ahead, load the gun. All right, he axe improved the gun again before he loaded it. Okay, now unload it. All right, axe improve. Every time he said, okay, now do this, axe improve. He did it every single time, and it. Towards the end of the test, the instructor finally said, okay, I think you've got axe improved down now. You don't need to do it for every time you touch the gun. Just, you know, when you're loading and unloading, that's it. Everything else is okay. So he kind of overdid it a little bit, but the instructor was, he said he was kind of impressed with him and said, you know, I'm really glad that you're this safety conscious because, you know, that's going to help you in the future.
Yeah, the other big thing too, I overdid it on the axe improve, and what I did is anytime I put the gun down, if it went on the table, my hands were off, when I picked it back up, axe improve every time.
And that's what you should do with your guns. Because
how finicky your instructor or tester is. But the other thing, this is key, and this is great because this will save a lot of heartbreak if there's a misunderstanding or something gets missed. Talk while you're doing the test challenge.
Yes.
And speak about everything you're doing. You say, okay, I'm picking up the pistol. I'm pulling the slide back. I'm examining the chamber. I'm looking at the feeding path for the ammunition. Say everything you do, because if the guy looks around, gets distracted, someone makes a noise, he looks away, and you do one part of the process and he misses it, he could
then
dispute you.
Then you get penalized for not doing it. Yeah,
exactly. And if you lose enough points on someone being distracted, you know, it's not a good thing. So if you give the running commentary, there's absolutely no chance for a misunderstanding.
That's
and you
right.
can make sure that he knows that you've nailed every single part of the process.
Well, and so many parts of Axe Improve are done very quickly. You're doing it maybe with your eyes, but it may not be as evident to someone watching. And so if you're speaking through the process, he knows you know it. You know, he knows you're doing it and that there's not, you know, something that you're doing that he's just not seeing you do.
Well, it's like the shoulder check on the driver's test when you go for your driver's license, you glance over your shoulder. But if the guy misses it, you know, he might mark down, didn't do shoulder check, right? So you just say
exactly.
it. I'm checking my blind spot.
Yep.
Yep.
Checking
another
it
sneaky
again.
Thing that another sneaky thing they did on my when I challenged it, they put, and this I think I was the first person to get it. They put the they would say, okay, you're at the range, you finish shooting, you know, the double action revolver, you're taking it home, place it as you would store it at home. Basically, to see if you remember, you know, the proper storage regulations for.
So, did you just toss it on the couch and walk away then?
Well, yeah, I thought about sticking it in my pocket, and, you know, and, but yeah. Just so that they have a case there, and you trigger lock it, and then you put it in the case, and then you lock the case. But beside it is no. This wasn't when you were storing it at home. This was if you were going to go home. So this is the transport one, and beside it they had ATT, Shin, and your pal. And he had his all sitting there, all his papers stacked up. And so every other person put the gun in, closed it, locked the case, and that was it. But what he wanted you to see you do was pick up the papers and put the papers in with it.
Right. Well, here's the thing, though. So I don't know if it's such a wise idea to lock up your ATT with your gun, because if you do get stopped,
no, I don't
the
think it is.
See it. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, I agree with you there, and I would never do that. But the idea was... The understanding
you knew
that
you
I
were
have my
bringing
ATT
your
with
paperwork
me.
With you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can have her come on the show and talk to us a little bit about it if she's
not
too shy.
Good. I'd like that.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, probably won't happen, huh? What I'll do is I'll tell her I'm going to ask her questions for the show that I'm going to just relay the answers. I won't tell her that I'm recording it, though, and we'll just pop it in.
There you go. Sounds
no
good.
No worries.
Hey, Matt, is that the Beretta?
This is the Beretta, yes. For those of you watching on the video, and obviously I'll hold up the microphone for the listeners.
Exactly.
But, yeah, this is the Beretta that I won at the...
So I got my Beretta out today, too.
Nationals. So. Very nice. Oh, you got a laser on yours.
No just laser. A light? X300 Surefire Light.
Nice. I bet you that's bright.
Oh, it's very, very bright. Yeah,
see, I keep my flashlight in my pocket, and it's separate from my gun. I don't.
Yeah, I also have another flash out seat backup. So I've got the one weapon mounted, and I've got the spare for backup.
I've got a spare too, but it's also in my pocket. I just.
So are you gonna come at someone with double lights?
I might. You don't know.
I blind them with one light and I strobe with the other.
I could do that. You know, have the old strobe going on there. I bet you that's really freaking out the video. Yeah.
That's an East Coast operator tactic.
That's right. Two lights, boys.
Two lights, no guns. It's good.
Yeah, I need to get a weapon light for my pistol.
I recommend the X300. It's an excellent light. Super, super high quality. I always mount the light. Well, not always, but I almost always mount the light up when I'm shooting. And apart from getting a bit of carbon and blackening on the lens, which cleans right off, I mean, the thing is, it's rock solid. It's never given me any trouble. And it does a fantastic job. So, you know, I have to say, like, very, very, very rugged. And I guess the gun, actually, it's been a long time since I've been on a podcast with other people. So last time I talked about my Beretta, it had probably 4,500 rounds through it. And now I'm above probably 7,500.
Oh, that's cool.
And
are you still shooting
that's
most
all
of the
fired
MFS
with the
it?
Weapon light on most of the time.
Yeah. Are you still shooting mostly MFS?
I have a mix because, you know, different things go on sale.
Right. Oh, okay.
Right now, yeah, actually, I'm working through the last of that. Yeah. No malfunctions except at 4,500 rounds when I disassembled the gun, the guide rod spring assembly had melted because it's made out of plastic. If I didn't take the gun apart, it would have kept running.
Right.
But when I stripped it down, it sort of came apart. So the only thing I've replaced has been the guide rod spring assembly. And if I didn't shoot as aggressively as I did, I probably wouldn't have had to replace it. It's only because I really hammer the rounds through it that the gun basically cooks and starts to smoke.
Yeah, it's funny when that happens.
I blame... It is. Well, you know, I don't get out to the range that often, so a visit has to be action-packed because I'm not out that often. So I'll shoot a minimum of 350 to 400 rounds a visit when I go. So, yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, we've actually got a question here or a comment here on our Q&A, but it's just Trevor. So no actual listeners have actually submitted any questions, but Trevor did.
He doesn't like
He says he doesn't like his replacement. So Chris, there's a snub for you. And then he did mention that they did the same thing to him for the ATT thing, that he didn't put it in the case, and they nailed him for that. So I guess that's something to watch out for if you're challenging your restricted or even just taking your restricted course. Make sure you put the ATT in with your case whenever you're transporting it. Now, don't do that in real life. I mean, you can if you want, but then you have to open up.
I'll admit, I do it.
Well, and the thing is, so do I. But, I mean, what are the chances of getting stopped? But, I mean, somebody is eventually going to get stopped and get asked to see their ATT, I would imagine, eventually. Otherwise, why would they have such a law in the books, right? There might be a little bit of sarcasm there.
Yeah. What I do is I take the ATT for the handgun, I make copies, and I put it in every single gun case that I own, because I don't necessarily bring the same gun case to the gun club depending on what I load up. So that way, no matter which case I grab, I've got it in there. If I had it somewhere else, like let's say in a range bag, and I forgot the range bag, now I don't have the ATT. So I'm guaranteed to have it. And then my solution to the traffic stop problem is I drive like a little old lady.
Right. Yeah, that's a good solution.
If your vehicle is in perfect working order and you're under the speed limit, there's no reason for anyone to pull you over unless it's a drinking and driving stop check. That's the only thing that will get you. Yeah. And you have to stop for that. But otherwise, they're just not going to stop
you when you drive carefully, right? Now, I do the same thing you do. I've got an ATT or a copy of it in all of my gun cases, but I've also taken a high-resolution photo of both sides of it that I keep on my phone. I don't know if that'll stand up with the police officer or not, but it might. And so I have it there anyway. I'll show him that first, and if he's happy, then I'll be on my way, and if he's not, then I'll open up the gun case and show him, but,
Yeah, the only thing you do have to show him, though, is your driver's license, all your car-related paperwork.
Right.
So your driver's license, unless he asks, do
you have a firearm in the vehicle? Yes. Is it restricted? Yes. Do you have your ATT? Are you a firearms officer? No. Well, why are you asking?
Well, my understanding is, and don't quote me on this because it's been a long time since I've talked about the subject with Ed Berlew, but I do believe that you don't have to answer any of those questions. If he asks if you have a firearm, or if he asks where you're going, you can just say, look, I just want to be on my way. Here's my license. Here's my insurance. And I don't really have anything else to say.
Right. That's true. As long as you don't lie and say that you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't have to answer any of those questions. But again, I think it'd be a very oddball situation for you to end up in that like that if you're not speeding or if your vehicle doesn't, if it's got burnout taillights.
Even if you are speeding and get pulled over, why would they, unless they see the gun case in the back of the car or something, like that'd be the only reason.
Yeah, or you've got your Browning sticker or whatever on your vehicle.
Funny, Trevor got pulled over onto the way to the range last year or 2 years ago, I think. He told this story on the show a while ago. And anyway, he had forgotten his wallet at home. So he didn't have anything. And he was speeding, and he got pulled over, and the police officer comes up. And Trevor said as he walked up past the car, he tapped the Glock sticker that Trevor has on his back window.
Interesting.
And Trevor's car was loaded to the gills with gun cases. Like, you couldn't not see the gun cases.
I think I saw a photo of that. Like, it was just overflowing with gun cases.
And the cop's like, so you're driving a little fast? And Trevor's like, yeah. Driver's license registration. Well, here's registration insurance, but I left my wallet at home. You gonna go back and get that? Yep. All right, see you later. That was it. No gun questions, nothing.
Wow. So that's a good one. That's a good encounter.
I mean, remember where he lives too. I mean, he lives in the middle of nowhere, or did. I mean, he has since moved into civilization, I guess. But police in that area, and that area has one of the biggest and best, gun ranges in Atlantic Canada. So a lot of the people there are pro-gun and do understand that there are shooters there. So I imagine the police officer knew what was going on. It was no big deal, and he just, wanted to have him slow down. So.
Yep.
Anyway, I guess we can talk just a little bit about what I did this week, and that's nothing. So moving, actually, I did do, we're back to the scope, the Nexstar scope that I've been having problems with. Last week, I declared that it was, in fact, junk. And I'm standing by that. It probably, it still is. But that being said, because I had taken it off the gun and was basically ready to discard it, because as I mentioned last week, every time the trigger reset or, you know, the crosshairs jiggled inside. Well, it turned out as I took it off the gun, I shook it and the whole thing just rattled inside. And I checked everything. Nothing was rattling externally. One of the lenses inside had come loose. They just screw into place. And I took the scope completely apart. There's a little set screw that if you take that out, I forget what it's called, but it's the part that I guess it's the eyepiece. You can adjust it for focus. Well, if you turn it all the way out, it'll actually come off the scope if you take out this set screw. So I took it right off and turned out the very first lens was actually loose. Or sorry, I guess it was the second lens. So it just had a kind of a rotating collar that was kind of sitting in. So I just took a screwdriver and just spun it up really, really tight and tightened it as much as I could and put it back together. And now the reticle movement wobble is all gone. It doesn't rattle anymore. So,
you fixed it. Nice.
It's fixed, but, I still don't know how much I trust it, and I haven't been out to the range with it yet. So, I don't know if it's going to hold zero. I mean, before it did, Trevor owned it for a while and he said it held zero just fine. So if it holds zero, then maybe I'll consider leaving it on the AR for a little while, but I'm not sure how much I trust it now that it's come apart once. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if it turns out to be permanently broken, what would be kind of cool is if you did a YouTube video, you know, in movies where the sniper shoots the other sniper through his scope.
Yep,
I think it'd be cool to see if you could put a bullet right through the scope, just through the glass. Just make sure it's you don't want the non-approved target thing.
I will not do this at the range because I'm not allowed to shoot glass at the range. I can legally take it to a gravel pit and shoot it, so I'll probably do that. And yes, of course, I will clean up all the glass because I'm a concerned citizen and blah blah blah, that good stuff. But yeah, no, I won't do it at the range and get a range in trouble again. Trevor mentions here again. He says you're messing up my stories. The Glock tapping window was on the way to the charity shoot. Well, I'm sorry, Trevor.
He's just tuning in to see if we're assassinating his character. That's basically right,
which we're going to continue to do. And, you know, if he didn't want us to do this, he should have come on the show tonight and told his own dang stories. So. Anyway, I think we could probably move on to our upcoming events. And those are, well, it's not an event, but we do have T-shirts available. And by T-shirts, I mean two. So the first two people who email the show saying that they want them. You can then, after I confirm that you are the people who did get the winning bid in, I guess, you can then send an EMT afterwards for $25. Don't send the EMT right away because maybe you're not the first one to email in, but I have an extra, extra large black and a medium black. So if you're either an extra, extra large or a medium and you want a black Slamfire Radio t-shirt, send me an email at slamfireradio@gmail.com. And if you're the first person to request either of those two sizes, I'll let you know, and you can send me an EMT, and I will ship that out to you ASAP.
And if you're not an extra, extra large, just eat lots of fried chicken.
Lots of fried chicken.
Just keep ordering it, like, every night.
And eventually the shirt will fit.
Gravy, and it'll fit like a glove. It'll be perfect fit on you.
That's right.
Like a sausage skin.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. That's not disgusting at all. Okay.
It'll really absorb that sweat, that greasy sweat.
Yeah.
After eating fried chicken. Yeah.
This is just a reminder. We do have a couple of shooting courses taking place. One is a pistol shooting course with Tommy Nelson. That's taking place August 2nd and 3rd. And we have a tactical carbine clinic with Daniel Shaw. That's October 11th. Currently, the pistol course with Tommy, there's one spot available still. So if you want that spot, again, email me at slamfireradio@gmail.com, and I will hook you up with what you need to do to get registered for that. The carbine clinic is currently full. However, if you do want in, send me an email anyway. I'll get you on the waiting list. And if somebody drops out, I'll let you know. And that'll be a first come, first serve basis sort of thing. So keep
those.
That's
the fella from Gun Dudes?
Tommy Nelson is the, Gun Dude. Yep.
Awesome.
So that's going to be really cool. He has actually purchased a plane ticket. Well, we've purchased a plane ticket for him. So he is definitely coming. So Daniel Shaw should, we'll be nailing down the final details with Daniel here very shortly as well. So if you haven't paid yet, Owen and Trevor and Amy, go ahead and make your payments right away.
Oh, I sent the EMT.
Oh, you did?
For Amy.
Okay. Well, we'll take care of that. Anyway, other than that, we do have two other events that you can come to, even though, they're not a first come first serve. It's anybody can show up to these two. And the first one is the charity shoot. And this is June 28th here in New Brunswick at the Rusty Goose Gun Club. Special guest is Steve Lee of the I Love Gun Song fame. So he's going to be there like he was 2 years ago, I believe, at the charity shoot. We're going to be doing some trap, some small bore silhouette, and by small bore silhouette, I mean basically gallery silhouette. All the targets are at the same distance, but it's a lot of fun. Come on out for that. We'll be doing some just full bore rifle shooting, just kind of a free-for-all, have some fun shooting downrange. And then in the afternoon, we'll be doing an Ipsic-style mini-match. So if you have a handgun and a holster and a couple of spare mags, come on out and we'll show you the sport of Ipsic. We'll have some fun. Like I said, it is a charity shoot, so that means we are donating all the funds to the Laurentides Autism Foundation. That organization supports families with autistic children. So this is going to a very worthy cause. So come on out, help support this. I should mention that we have actually raised $250 already for this foundation, and that was actually due to Trevor being a pansy and not wanting to jump in the snow. So he said, after we all hounded him enough, he said, finally, fine, I'll jump in the snow if you send in donations for this for, $150 or whatever. And we reached that and then some. So yep. Trevor
that,
did get tossed in the snow.
That video is up on Slamfire Facebook page.
Yeah, so go check that out.
Wrestled by Muffin.
He did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jason and Officer Frank actually tossed him in the snow. So that was actually
really cool. It was a police beat down too.
Kind of was.
Nice. I like that. Oh, that's good.
The other event we have coming up that, again, anybody can come to, I think, is the multi-gun. Now, Trevor did mention in the past that eventually you are going to need a black badge to participate in this. I don't think that counts this year. So this year, this may be the last year that you can compete in this multi-gun without having your Ipsic black badge. So if that interests you and you want to come out, it's August 16th and 17th. There'll be 12 stages, and it's all three guns. So handgun, carbine, and rifle. It is... I mean, the last two events were just absolutely...
Would it be handgun?
Sorry. Shotgun. Yeah.
There we go.
Handgun, carbine, and shotgun. No rifles. Yeah. Wow.
Well, carbine or carbine?
Only short rifles.
So I can't bring my Mosin Nagant? Come on.
If you want to, you can. Sure, I don't care. You bring whatever.
What's the longest
you want to bring.
Distance you'd be shooting at?
100 meters will be the longest.
Okay,
shot.
Yeah, so anything will do.
Yeah, so you do want, now most of the shots for your rifle will be actually up close. So red dot is probably your best option. But, bring whatever you got, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, we're not playing for money, so don't worry about being outgunned or not good enough or not enough experience. Don't even worry about that. Just come on out, have a great time with us, and we'll be glad to have you. So we'll post more details on that as the event draws closer. So anyway... That's
And also actually, I'll.
Oh yeah, that's right. You have some upcoming events you want to talk about. Yeah, go next.
I do. I'm just gonna basically be vague about it, but I'm working on a fundraising activity that'll be taking place in Toronto. It's going to be a banquet. I just have to firm things up with a sponsor and a guest of honor, but it will be announced on Gun Nuts, and also I will be announcing it on Slamfire. Matt and the guys have been nice enough to say that they'll help me out with promoting it. But it should be a good time, a fun time in Toronto, gun-hating Toronto, having a whole bunch of gun owners come together to work on raising funds basically to fight the reclassification issue. So that should be really awesome. So I'm looking forward to that. So stay tuned on CGN and the other forums, and stay tuned to Slamfire, of course. I'm really looking forward to it. It should be great. So some good coming soon news in terms of that.
Awesome.
Very good. Mm-hmm. We do have a question from somebody who's not Trevor.
Yay!
Weird. Anyway, Henry, welcome to the show, Henry. He asks, can you folks come visit your fans here at the University of Calgary Firearms Association? Definitely, we'll be right there. Just give us a minute.
Actually, I'm closest, so I should start driving.
You better get going. You better get going. Yeah, Henry, we're all the way on the East Coast here. That would be a bit of a drive. If I ever end up in Calgary and I have time to look you up and go say hi, absolutely, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, no, that'd be fun. If I'm out in Cowtown, I'd say hi too. Hopefully you've got a range there that's local to you that you can shoot at. Actually, University of Toronto has one of the oldest handgun ranges in the city. Unfortunately, it's been shut down. It's on city property, but the range is still there, and they currently use it for archery, but it would be nice if we could get that open again at some point. So it's nice to know that university students somewhere in Canada are having a good time with guns and shooting. So maybe at some point we'll be able to return the range at U of T to full use again. I guess it'll just take a shift in municipal politics and maybe provincial politics for that to happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks, Henry, for submitting that. And it's nice to hear that we have fans, you know, coast to coast. So it's nice to interact with you guys. So, all right. Well, we don't really have a main topic this week. We basically it was Trevor's fault.
I could hit you up with a little something that I've been doing because I did go to the Toronto Sportsman Show and met some really cool people and saw some really cool new products.
Yes, tell us about that. I wanted to finish blaming Trevor for us not having a main topic this week.
Oh please. Yeah, we have to know how clean the underside of the bus is.
It's very clean, I hope. Well, actually, it won't be after we finish running over Trevor. Yeah, no, it's like last time. Remember, we had a guest lined up and a main topic, but Trevor wasn't going to be here, so he couldn't be here tonight. So again, we were going to have Chuck Norris on. And Trevor was like, no, if I can't come on, Chuck can't come on. So no Chuck Norris. And this was Chuck's only night that he was free. So because Trevor, you know, is selfish and hates the listeners that much, you guys are never going to be able to hear Chuck Norris here on this show. So, you know, you can send your hate mail to Trevor. I believe that's Trevor Furlot at, I'm not going to give you his email address, but anyway, if you think that's true.
But send the Slamfire forwarded on, don't worry.
Oh yeah, no, you can send your hate mail to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Attention Trevor Furlot, listener hater. Thanks for not letting us hear Chuck Norris. You can that'll basically get you in. So
also send him your hentai as well. Trevor won't know what that is, but he'll be very very worked up if he does receive some. So send him a little hentai.
I'm not.
You guys
ask.
Probably don't know what hentai is.
No, I'm just gonna. We're just gonna roll with what you did at the gun show.
Well, actually, what I'll do is I'm gonna warp back in time a little bit because my podcast feed hasn't been active for technical reasons. The episodes are still up, but I haven't been able to add to it. But that's gonna change soon. So I'll go back in time to a previous event, which is Fan Expo.
Oh, okay.
In 2013, and that's basically, you know, if you know what hentai is, you'd be at Fan Expo. But basically, it's comic book, sci-fi, movies, horror stuff, general pop culture stuff with sort of a geek twist to it. If you're into video games, if you're into, superhero type movies, that's the kind of place that you'd want to hang out. So I did go there and talk to some really interesting people, and I've got some awesome interviews to put up. Actually, 10X went with me, and 9X also came along. So we spent the day together, and we hung out, basically checked out all the Daleks. There were some really cool Daleks that were there. Checked out all the Doctor Who stuff, because 9X is really into that.
Doctor Who is awesome.
But
just saying.
Doctor Who is absolutely fantastic, and it was out of control. I've got an all... I've got an all Dalek episode that's going to go up with all the different Dalek constructors, which is really cool. But a really cool interview that I got, Max Brooks, Zombie Survival Guide. So he's the guy who wrote the books that the movie World War Z with Brad Pitt is based on.
I believe that's World War Z.
Cool.
We are Canadian.
CZ. It depends on which side of the border you're on. He's actually...
I got to tell you a funny story, guys. I'm sorry. I'm going to do the daddy thing here.
Okay.
I'm sitting at supper, and I brought pizza home for supper tonight, kind of as a special treat. And so it says pizza on the box. And so my daughter, who's learning to read, she's 5, she goes, look, it's a Z. I said, did you know that could be a Z? She goes, what's a Z? Just like that.
She's a Canadian.
She's Canadian. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go back to... Because I've read both of those books. I have both of them. They're both quite good. I really enjoyed World War Z or Z, whichever country you're in. It was a fascinating book, the way it was written.
Yeah, and I've got both autographed. I also had him autograph several boxes of Zombie Max ammo for me.
That's cool. And I've got some Zombie Max ammo.
Yeah, and actually I've got quite a collection of autographed Zombie Max ammo by indie film directors and stuff. I met some other very cool people. But it turns out Max Brooks is actually a historic gun collector.
Well,
so
that's interesting.
Yeah, so if you tune in, you can hear about his Lee Enfield rifles, which he's collecting. He's also collecting survival rifles and I believe black powder rifles as well.
Cool.
So that was cool. I got to interview the owner of a company that makes one-to-one scale prop guns from popular video game franchises. So, you know, if you're into your first-person shooters and stuff, you want an actual one-to-one scale prop gun from Gears of War, they make it. And it's absolutely amazing to see what they have. So that was really cool. That's called Project Triforce. That's the name of the company. And I also, really good interview, interviewed Jen and Sylvia Soska. They recently made a horror movie called American Mary. And their first movie was actually called Dead Hooker in a Trunk, which was their breakout movie. And you would love these girls. You guys would absolutely love them. They're incredibly pretty, incredibly smart, incredibly witty and funny, but they're also shooters. They're into guns, which is really, really cool. So we talked about directing movies and we talked about shooting guns and ninja weapons and all kinds of other stuff. So, you know, got some really good interviews at Fan Expo. And then when it came to the Sportsman Show, we can do a little bit of a segue here because you guys were talking bears.
Yes.
And spring bear hunt, bear hunt's back in Ontario. And some of the guys I talked with the Beasley brothers, Keith Beasley and Paul Beasley were there, famous for Canada and the Rough. It's Canada's number one outdoors and hunting show. And these guys are amazing to talk to. So I've got coming up a 45-minute episode. We get an update of how their last year has been after they got dropped from Global. And that was a huge knock to the whole family there. And so we talk about how they've recovered, how they've bounced back. And we talked to Paul about an amazing hunt that they did, ghost rams, hunting sheep in the mountains, literally on mountaintops, shooting mountaintop to mountaintop in pounding hailstorms in just like the most adverse conditions possible. The hunting story they told was the most riveting hunting story that I'd ever heard. It's the most amazing hunting footage I've ever seen. And the trophy that they got at the end was just incredible. I saw still photos, top of the mountain, the sun shining down after a massive hailstorm, and they made that shot and got the kill. And it was quick, it was clean, and they did it just right, because if they hadn't done the shot placement correctly or if they hadn't got the timing right, they would have lost the ram down the side of the mountain. It was that sort of tense and close. So really amazing stuff. But good to know that the bear hunt's back on in Ontario. And you guys, I think, were talking about some bear.
Yeah, actually, Owen was talking about making a double man bear blind or bear stand or something like that.
Yeah, bear stand. Yeah, I just have it's a one man and it's a homemade jobby. It works, but it's to take other people with me, which I want to do, or go, you know, for example, if you were to come down and hunt, I'd like to go out, you know, with you mm-hmm. and video it or something like that and video the hunt. But it's impossible to do right now in a single man bear.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you could stay on the ground. Stand, so. You stay on the ground with the video camera and I'll be up in the stand. I'm okay with that. That's no problem.
I'm okay with that too, because we would never see any bears.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's unfortunate.
Matt is the wrong guy when you're trying to lure in the game.
I'm just gonna like completely douse myself with scent be gone and like sit in a complete burlap sack and like completely silent and I won't make any noise, and then maybe the game won't think I'm there and they'll come around. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I've got two guys new to hunting or new to hunting in New Brunswick who would like to go. And so, I'm thinking, you know, I'm not just going to send them off in the woods by themselves, obviously. So, I definitely need to build, you know, kind of a multi-person where you can have two guys sitting comfortably there and you're close by. You're not, you know, having to yell, you know, talk or even loudly whisper to each other if, you know, to get their attention. And
can we do like Duck Dynasty and put like a RV trailer up in a tree stand or something? So we have like some amenities while we're up there.
Oh yeah, I plan on having, you know, a microwave and a coffee maker and a TV. Perfect. And you know.
I like it. All right, I'm down for that.
Great. So cool. I need you to help me build it.
Yeah. Just let me know when. I'll be there. I know how to swing a hammer, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, what else did you get to see there, Chris?
Oh, man, there's so much. I mean, it's going to be an action-packed episode, but basically I'll give you the highlights. Savage, the B-Mag. I got to handle the brand-new B-Mag rifle, Super High Velocity 17. It's an amazing gun, and when you work the action on it, it's amazing how tight it locks up. We're talking super high pressure. And this thing has more horsepower downrange than most other 17s have at the muzzle. So something that downrange would have, like, let's say a foot or, you know, two worth of drop, this thing's only got a couple of inches. It really, the ammunition's really cool. It's available from Federal now. So the ammo's out there, the gun's out there. So that was awesome. And the other thing that I'd never really tried before from Savage was muzzle loaders, because I shoot indoors. They don't allow black powder, but also it's not really something that I thought of as my thing. But I tried their hammer-fired models with the 3.5-pound trigger, or 3.4-pound trigger, and they were really cool. But they had something that was really amazing that maybe Trevor would like. It's a Striker-fired muzzle loader, which is amazing.
Oh, like a 1911.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But I have to say, I tried the trigger on it, and the trigger was amazingly crisp. It was really, really cool. And I think there's going to be some big cool things happening with black powder in the near future with muzzle loaders. I see it taking off. I think it's something that people are really going to get into. I also talked to all the reps who went to SHOT Show, just sort of to get some feedback on the gun drought, the ammo drought, and sort of see what they were saying in terms of how things are going in the USA. So the AR-15 drought is over. That's done. But the rimfire shortage is still on. So in the United States, hard to get rimfire. And the other thing is that a lot of manufacturers, when it comes to ammo, they're just making the most popular SKUs. They're staying away from the weird stuff. They're staying away from oddball bullet weights and stuff like that. So you can get the ammo that you want, yeah. But it's just a shortened up lineup. And the other thing, too, is that in the U.S., a lot of retailers are still padding their orders because they don't want to fall short for their customers. So what that's happening is it's starting to extend the gun shortage. Now, it's understandable why they're doing it. They want to serve their customers, so that's why they pad the orders. But at the same time, it's sort of stretching things out. But there's some other cool stuff. Browning's got some new clothing called the Hell's Bells line that's coming out for women. They've got a new rifle out as well, which is really cool, which is a change-up on the A-bolts. And also Beretta. This was really cool. Stoker Canada booth was amazing. They've got some really cool stuff coming soon from all the shotgun lines that they sell. So Benelli, Frankie, Beretta, really cool stuff with recoil systems for semi-autos. But if you missed out on the CX4 carbines that came out non-restricted, and like they literally sold out within a few days, they've got another batch coming. So if you missed it, don't worry. There are more on the way. And they are shipping with Beretta 92 series pistol mags. So 10 rounds per mag, 2 mags per gun. That's how they're shipping. And also some other cool news, Beretta ARX 100. I was going to mention this on my podcast, but you'll hear it here first. There is a sample in Canada. It is at the RCMP and is slated for non-restricted classification. That's what they hope. And the folks at Stoker Canada have been in contact with the RCMP on a regular basis, had several meetings with them, and they did bring in a model semi-auto only manufacturer and receiver and parts. Previously, there were semi-ARXs. They were sold to the police in Mexico, but they were simply a delete of the full auto parts. This is a true semi-only gun that would be sold in the American market and also here with a Canadian length barrel. So,
do you say that that's an ARX 100?
Yes, the 5.56 223 Beretta rifle, and it is cool.
I like that.
Now, I haven't had a chance to handle it in person, and I'm hoping at some point in the near future I will get to handle a sample that's in Canada and check it out. But I have to say, it looks gorgeous. It looks even better with a 40 millimeter grenade launcher on it. And my podcast, Spiros and I talk about the technology of the ARX. And basically, this is what we're seeing is sort of, I think, the end of the technological advance of our current generation of rifles. I think the last frontier is human engineering and ergonomics. It's basically making things user-friendly. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, I think the next thing will have to be some kind of huge leap forward in gun design that will just sort of be a quantum leap. And I don't know where that's going to come from. But I think Beretta's got everyone beat hands down with this rifle when it comes to the features. And, you know, like simple things like you can switch ejection on the fly from left to right. You can switch charging handle from left to right on the fly. You can eject, magazine eject left side, right side, or center. The special materials they're using for the barrel surround, you can fire the gun until the barrel is literally white hot, and you will not melt or damage the housing. And a lot of people look at things like, you know, the ARX or let's say the Bushmaster ACR. They say, oh, the guns look chunky, the guns look big. You know, I've shot the ACR. I've tried those different types of guns out, and although they look chunky, they are super, super comfortable. Mm. You know, these are just taking the human factor into the equation, and I think once we've addressed that, I don't think there's much ground to be gained in conventional rifle design, but it's going to be a cool interview. Also, really cool laser devices that Stoker's bringing in now. If you've always wanted LDI products, they're one of the suppliers to U.S. military. If you want visible spectrum green and red or infrared lasers or pointers, they're available from Stoker to the law enforcement, military, and civilian market. There are some restrictions for the civilian market. I talked with Tim Kay from the Ontario Rifle Association about the explosion in service rifle. Talked to Pat Harrison about IPSC, and of course he's got his own podcast now. Excalibur Crossbows, Elite Bows has some really cool stuff out. Sauer is a new name to me, at least in rifles, and really fantastic European rifles. And Kallus, a really cool name in optics. So we talked to the guys from Vortex. They got this Vortex Extreme Challenge going on in the U.S. If you want to Google search something that's really cool in a shooting competition, we'll talk about that. And some of the guys from Vortex are going down, and it's an amazing course of fire, and I'm going to have to talk with them when they come back. Also, there's a Canadian company. This is really cool. There's a company called Duty Apparel, and these guys have mixed Molly gear with Blaze Orange hunting gear. I think they're the first people ever to do it. But you've got full-on tactical modular-style pouches and vests in a hunting configuration. It's amazing. So we talk about that. Also, there's a company called General Starlight, Canadian company, and I talked to them about night vision, all the generations, plus thermal. And nowadays, night vision is affordable. And we also talk about the science of how night vision works. So whether it's light amplification or thermal, so that's really cool. Talked with the folks from Nikon about binos. I actually talked with Mike Deinhoven. He's a good friend of ours who's on the podcast every now and then about his trip to SHOT Show. And then finally, the big one is the Beasley Brothers interview. So in a nutshell, that's sort of what I did with guns recently. And man, it was just awesome. And it was good to reconnect with people that I hadn't seen in a long time because I'm used to seeing people on the forums or whatever, but you actually get out to a show and meet them and get to shake their hands and hang out. It's just, there's no substitute for that. And it's just a really great community. So yeah, those are some of my highlights. So looking forward to shooting a lot of those guns in the near future too. And I'll do reviews on those when I get them.
So maybe I was just going to say this ARX 100, it's very scar looking.
It is. It's part of that new generation of rifles. They all sort of look similar. But, you know, you're sort of hitting that point in design where all the factors are brought in ahead of time. The one thing that's the real giveaway with this is the grenade launcher.
Yeah, because everybody needs a grenade launcher. Come on.
Well, the 40 mil, it's a lot of – I mean, I haven't tried one yet. I've had the chance to handle 40 millimeter grenade launchers. And they're very, very cool. The aiming system is really neat. And apparently, I mean, it's a very intuitive style of, you just sort of have a flip-up sight with gradations for distance. And apparently you can pop one right through a window with very little practice. and this is getting back to the point I was making before, if you look at all your traditional grenade launcher attachments, they all look like add-ons. They do not look like they were designed to go with the gun. They all look like an afterthought from your M203 to your H&Ks, everything else.
Well, the one for the Beretta, they were an afterthought. They weren't designed for it, so.
Absolutely. But the Beretta, this is the first one that has it actually flows right into the design of the gun.
And yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it, and it does. With that on the bottom, it just looks seamless.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're taking that ergonomics and human factor to a higher level. No more add-ons. Everything is designed to work from day one. And the other thing you'll find is there aren't rails everywhere. I think everyone had a rail fetish for a little while where mm-hmm. every square inch of a gun had to be covered with rails. This is just rail just where you need it. Just in the right spots. And
I like that.
Yeah,
that trend where people were putting rails everywhere really irritated me. I mean, I have no problem with a versatile gun and being able to put what you want where you want it, but to have the whole gun just completely covered in rails, it not only does it look dumb and look ugly, it's hard to shoot too. I mean, those rails will rip up your hand if they're under the handguard.
Oh, super uncomfortable. I mean, I don't shoot with gloves. I mean, I'm shooting indoors. So it's never cold for me, so... yeah, definitely tear up your hands, and you know there are places to put your equipment, but you're not going to put it in a completely ridiculous location. So
exactly.
Why put a rail there? It doesn't make sense. And now the thing, I guess, is people have a key mod fetish. So it's this key mod rail is sort of the new sort of hot thing that people are into, where you have the little modular sections of rail that slot in to the handguard or slot
right.
into other places.
Yep.
And so you just attach the bit of rail that you want, but that seems right. to be the new hotness now, but I'm sure that'll fade in time. But
that's okay to have it as something like that, because then you can at least remove the rail. But at the same time, if it's in a spot where you'd never put a gun or an accessory anyway, what's the point in, I don't know. I guess versatility is always good. So I guess we'll just leave it at that for now.
Yeah, versatility is good, but this is sort of the whole new generation thing. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with military style guns in the near future, because the world economy is not good. Military budgets are down. Wars are winding down. Iraq war is done. Afghanistan's going to wind down. And a lot of defense contractors aren't making real big pieces like tanks anymore either. I think the Russians are the only ones who are currently producing tanks. So there might be a real gap, and maybe it might be several decades before something really cool and new comes out that's a leap forward in terms of just regular small arms, just because of the economy. Or, you know, if the economy heats up or if there's another war, we might see something come out. But I think the ARX and its cousins are probably going to be the pinnacle of what we see for the next little while. That's just my guess. I'm just BSing. I'm not an expert on it, but, you know, just an enthusiast's opinion.
Cool. Very cool. All right, well, I definitely look forward to hearing more about those things that you talked about. I can't wait to get your show back up and running and get your technical difficulties ironed out and get your shows back out, because those were always ones that I enjoyed listening to.
You know, I was just in dealing with this ARX, because I had never heard of it before, to be honest, and looking at these, I'm just fascinated with them. I don't know what the going rate in Canada will be, but I was just looking at a website, and they're saying that last year, the MSRP was just under $2,000.
Yeah, American pricing has been released. I don't believe you can purchase the rifle yet in the United States, but production will start up there first. We, of course, have to wait for the RCMP. If you're military or law enforcement, of course, you can have access to it now and either get the full auto or get the semi with the full auto parts stripped out. But it looks like it's in the same price range as those sort of new generation guns, but you can't beat the features. The features are amazing. I think even when it comes to the stock, I think the stock is both collapsible and will fold left and right.
Yes.
But I'm not sure. I have to check that too. So absolutely everything is ambidextrous, and you talk about, you know, combat pickup. If you're one of those guys, you want to do the tactical training type thing. If it's set up for a lefty, within a few seconds, it's set up for a right-handed with either no tools or some functions. All you need is basically the tip of a 5.56 bullet to press into an indentation to switch something. So it's a bullet button type thing, or just switch on the fly manually. So
it's pretty sweet. And you know, really, if you think about it, $2,000 is not that much money for that gun.
No, I mean, it isn't.
It'd be great if it was less, but if you look at, you know, Swiss Arms or even an XCR.
You're up to that price range anyway, and you don't have all those same features that this one does.
Right.
Now, this has got everything you could possibly want on it, plus the rail sections to mount your whatever cool goodies you want to sort of accessorize with. You'll want your red dot on there, but people also want to put lights and other things on. But It's a pretty amazing sort of gun, and I think it's a sleeper hit, and I think it'll hit in the way that like guns like the ACR never did.
Right.
You know, because there was a lot of hype around those, and not a lot of people using them. Not a lot of them got out there. But
well,
the same thing.
Honest,
with the SCAR.
I don't like the look of the SCAR and that type of rifle. I like the AR, but I found the SCAR really chunky and and similar looking rifles. And I wonder if there is a certain aesthetic that when you look back at World War II aircraft, they had this certain aerodynamic appeal and charm and character. And now you look at modern warfare aircraft, they're all very angular and they're not very interesting to look at. They're not very pretty, you know, and, and I feel that small arms are kind of doing the same thing. The AR is it's an okay looking rifle, but the Garand, that thing was a beauty. The Lee Enfield, the old Lee Enfields, the Rosses, you know, they were works of art. And
yeah.
I don't know, I just sort of feel like the SCAR and the ACR and those types of the new platforms that are coming out, even the Tavor, everything seems very chunky. And
it's funny, you're taking me back to Fanex. So I interviewed a comic book artist or a comic book writer, named Garth Ennis. Very famous in comic book circles. He's written books like Preacher and Crossed. But he actually wrote a graphic novel called 303. And I ended up interviewing him because I saw this book and I was like, whoever wrote this comic knows about guns. Because the title was 303 and it was a picture of a guy with a Lee Enfield on the cover.
Nice.
And we sat down and talked with him. And he's an older gentleman, just older than sort of the average cat. And so he remembers British war comics when he grew up in England, and that's
right,
what he grew up with. So he took that inspiration and moved that into combat in Afghanistan during the Soviet occupation, made a really amazing comic book. And you know, we talked about 303. I said, hey, 303, there are lots of guns chambered then. He's like, I've always wanted to fire a Bren gun. I'm like, me too. I've handled deactivated Bren guns. I've never actually gotten to fire one live. But we started talking about guns, and he's fired some of the most iconic guns of World War II. He's fired full auto Sten. He's fired, of course, a World War II 1911. And the Thompson with the drum mag, he said that was just like the best thing in the world to shoot that off. But he said the exact same thing that you're saying. He was saying that whether it's cars, guns, it doesn't matter. Technology is all evolving into the same shapes, and that he's really got to go back in time to find really cool looking guns, especially when he's matching them up with characters. And he started talking about how in his various comic books, he'll select weapons, because these are all action oriented comics, to suit the personality of whatever character is going to be drawn by the comic book artist. And he goes to those World War II type of guns because they've got that feel and they've got that personality and they've got wood and they've got patina and they've got battle scars and they've got style. And he's not really fascinated by the new stuff. And the only thing that I can say in defense of the new stuff is I've shot the Tavor, I've shot, a lot of these different types of rifles. I love how they feel. They may not necessarily look that cool, but when I'm shooting the Tavor, especially because I'm a smaller guy, I'm 5'8", I have short arms and stumpy legs, I'm not your typical big, hulking guy, but the Tavor is meant to be used by male and female soldiers. So it's good for people who are somewhat smaller, and so it fits me like a glove. And it's just super comfortable to shoot. So, may look funny. But I have to say it's a try before you buy things. Do not judge these guns on their looks. Shoot them first. Yeah. I would hands down, in any situation where I had to shoot accurately, take a Tavor or one of these new generation or an ACR or any of these new generation rifles, because you can just get them set up so comfortably that you can just hit things all day long. I've always found the AR-15 funny. I find that the controls are in weird places. It's just an oddball gun to me, right? So I still love them; they're great. But I'd rather be shooting one of the newer guns. And I do things off feel, like my Beretta that I've got here today. I bought it after a range day. They had Beretta Day at Target Sports. I tried it. I shot everything in a nickel-sized group, and I immediately bought one. I bought it because I'd never shot this well with anything else before.
Right. So it wasn't about how it fit your hand, you know, and it worked. So it's function before form. And I mean, that's the way it should be. And I have no problem with, you know, putting the emphasis on function over form. But if you have the option of having both, then I think that'd be nice to have. Now, obviously, owning a Glock, I don't have form at all because these things are just bricks. But it does shoot well. So same thing with me. I gave up a gun. I still own it because it's my wife's now. But my SR9, I really like the look of the SR9. It's got, you know, that two-tone stainless steel. It's you know, the ergonomics of it are okay. But the way it looks, the way the dimensions are on it, everything seems to match and go together properly. I really like it, how it looks. But my Glock,
I shoot. It shoots well, too.
What's that?
The SR9 is great. I picked it up.
Yep.
The first time I tried it, I fired one mag to get used to it, and by the second mag, I was knocking down steel plates at 25 yards.
Boom.
So, I mean, you cannot knock this gun in for the price. I don't think there's anything cheaper out there unless it's Norinco, right?
You've got a good point there. It's not an expensive gun.
I think you did do a video where you shot them back-to-back, and you were better with the Glock.
Hands down, yep. At least 25% smaller groups. I don't know, it fits my hand better or something. It's actually not very comfortable to hold on to be perfectly honest with you. It doesn't fit my hand great, but it's very, very grippy. It's got big serrations in it and big texture, and I've actually built up calluses.
Is that Gen 4 or
Gen 3? It's a Gen
3. Gen 3 RTF, the rough texture?
Just the regular Gen 3.
Okay, interesting.
And it actually builds up calluses. But the thing is, because of that, the gun doesn't move in my hand when I shoot it. And I think the extra angle on the grip actually helps the gun to actually recoil a little bit differently, so it actually comes back more instead of forcing my hand to rise, and you know, it helps eliminate muzzle flip a bit too. And I think you see that in the video.
I absolutely agree with that. And I have fired the Glock in every chambering except 10mm.
Right.
So every model that's available in Canada, apart from ones where you have to custom order a barrel, I've shot them all. And in 357 SIG, which is super, super snappy in a lot of guns, in the Glock it isn't. It's a straight push back, and your sights just re-index right on target. So, I mean, if you're someone who wants a funky chambering and you want, 357 SIG, a Glock is excellent. I can highly recommend that one, say. That is a really, really good way to go if you want something that's going to be accurate without the snap.
No, I agree. And you mentioned 357 SIG. That's hands down my favorite handgun round. I won't buy one because it's completely useless and expensive for me, because living in Canada, the only place I can shoot it is at the range. But if for whatever reason in the future, it ends up that we're allowed to either handgun hunt or at least carry our handguns for protection out in the woods, I would hands down get a 357 SIG, a Glock 17 and 357 SIG. Well, it wouldn't be a Glock 17, I guess it'd be a Glock 23 or 24, whatever it is that model number is. But what a great caliber. I mean, lots of speed, lots of power, and like you said, very manageable.
Fun. It's a lot of fun, too. I mean, that's just a really enjoyable one to shoot. So, I'd go with that. But, I mean, you also, the thing is, Glocks, I shoot very well with all of them. And and they're just, it's a decent all-around. You know, I'm not really a fanboy of any particular brand, like some people are.
Somebody we know, Trevor Furlough.
Yeah, I think you should just buy whatever you like and whatever feels good.
For sure.
But, you know, as a brand, Glock's consistently been good. I've shot well with all of their guns, and they're not perfect.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
You know, I mean, you have the limp wristing problem. I'd rather have a gun that cycles no matter how you hold it. You know, you got your brass bulging out from the unsupported chamber if you're reloading. You know, the earlier generations, people were putting skateboard tape on the hand grips because they found them slippery, right?
Yeah, well, the fourth generation and the third generation, that's definitely not an issue, at least not for me. It's actually almost painful to grip. When I first got it was painful to grip.
That's what I found with the RTF model. I picked one up and I was like, ugh, don't like it. It was like trying to hold on to a cactus.
But that's good, though, because the gun doesn't move in your hand under recoil, which is, you know, that's important, especially if it's hot and you're sweating or, you know, for people who have more dire needs, you know, if your hand's covered in blood, you know, you want your gun
that's
to not move
around.
That's
a weird example, though. That's such a weird example, the hand covered in blood thing.
If you're in a gunfight, you might end up with your hand covered in blood, right?
I think you'd probably have to have been in a knife fight first.
Maybe.
And then transition to your gun.
Maybe you were helping somebody, and then it turned into a gunfight. You know, they'd already been hurt.
What I would go to is I would just go to sweat, which is the normal thing to have on your hand. That's that you're more likely to have sweat on your hand than blood. But I don't know why.
Not if you're Trevor and you're picking your nose.
I think they go to blood because blood is slippery. Sweat is not.
I don't know.
Sweat can be pretty slippery.
Well, it's not as slippery as blood.
It's not as slippery as blood. I will give them that.
Are you speaking from personal experience?
Yes. This is going to sound bad, but as a man who's had blood on his hands.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know. I killed lots of animals and butchered lots of animals every year.
Okay.
I'm used to having blood on my hands, and I find my knives get slippery, and it's. Whereas if I'm just sweating, yeah, it's a little
so
slick, but it's not as bad. Blood is really slippery.
Yeah. Well, so we do actually have to start wrapping up. And before we go, we do have a question that came in quite a while ago that we didn't get a chance to get to, and it's from Bront. I thought it was Brent, but it's definitely an O, so Bront. And he asked, when you guys are not shooting, what do you do for entertainment? Are you guys gamers? So, well, Trevor's a gamer when it comes to IPSC, that's for sure. But Owen and I have been known to play Counter-Strike a little bit online, but we haven't been on there in quite a while.
Oh, that's old school.
Very
that's
old school.
That's super old school.
It's because our computers suck, basically.
If you see 00 Buck running around with a submachine gun or something, like, that's me.
00 Buck's your online too, then, huh? Cool.
So well,
if you saw me, you saw the guy running around dying a lot and really sucking, that was me.
Oh, okay.
Or me. Yeah. So one other question here, and it's from Brian Bolivar, actually. So Brian, welcome to the show. I haven't seen you in a while, but whatever. Thanks for, you know, stopping in whenever you go by the house, but, you know. He says, okay, I want to test on YouTube, blood versus sweat. What's the best firearms lubricant? So we'll see if we can work something out there for you. But on that note, we do actually have to wrap up now. So please be sure to join one or both of our firearms organizations here in Canada, the CSSA and or the NFA, or better yet, both. These are the guys who are fighting for us. So sign up. I have been told that the memberships are going up because of the latest gun reclassification stuff. So if you want your voice heard in Ottawa, sign up. These guys represent us and they're doing good things for us. So go sign up. Tell them we sent you. Also check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada online web forum. We have our own forum there. You can ask questions in there and we will be happy to answer you. You can also check us out on Facebook. Just search Slamfire Radio and of course it'll pop up and you can make fun of us or ask us questions or whatever you like there. And it's a great way to interact with us. We are on both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. There's a lot of good information on both of those. Reno Viola has a lot of fishing stuff, but they're branching out into some more gun and other outdoor-related activity shows as well. So check him out. Check out his network and listen to some shows there. And, of course, Crusader Podcast Network, all kinds of good content on there. So go give some of those shows a listen, too. Other than that, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. You pretty much saved the show this week, seeing as Trevor ran off with Chuck Norris. All right. Well, like I said, thanks again for joining us. We hope to have you on again sometime soon.
Cheers. It was a happy accident.
It certainly was. That you should accidentally call me more often.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week, I suppose. And this week, Trevor's not wrong, Burgundy, because, well, he's not here.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.